question, of which I've read papers before it many times, back east until I got quite ill in the 70s, and no longer go back east. But I do continue to go to the meetings on the Pacific Coast, and of course this year the big meeting will be in Los Angeles.
Right.
And it has met twice in San Francisco since those days. The other things that occurred, let me see, during the war period.
May I ask you a
yeah,
question
go ahead.
Here?
Go ahead.
I was wondering, now you would spend your summers
in
doing
research
at Berkeley,
back every year.
And then that would keep you up on your research and writing?
All the time. I'd always do my basic research would be done in the summers at Berkeley. In the main, I very seldom taught summer session. The last time I taught summer session was in San Francisco in 1900, I think it was 47.
Oh boy.
And I've used every summer since to do basic research.
Mm-hmm.
And then I use my year into here to check over materials, do some writing because I'm busy during the year
with
teaching and so on, downline guiding students.
And then you were able to continue to draw off all that material you brought in?
Oh yes, and beg, borrow, and still buy.
Because you said you probably used 20% of some
Quite the
of
most.
That. Yeah.
Yes, that's true. That's very true. And that's when I did most of them, because most of my books have been since the 40s.
Right.
Since the war.
Right.
During the time. Well, that's because you have to establish
Build
your reputation.
And
I was just getting my reputation, but getting a rather peculiar one, because half of them know me as an California is starting, and half of Nomi is Mississippi Valley. Yes, the Missouri Valley. The other thing that, let me see what else took place during Heppner right after the war. Of course, we were busy then with students and with becoming full-fledged.
This is a time also that San Diego starts growing.
Oh,
yes. Right after World War.
Tremendous. And we had to bring in lots of people quickly because we were given good salaries at that time, relatively speaking, as well. But we couldn't always get the best ones because the universities usually got the best ones.
Now, were
but
a lot
we
of,
got, but we were very lucky.
A lot of the students were going for their education majors at the time, the education degree.
And not only the education degree, which at first that's all we could give, you see, was an education. And then we gave it the AB if you had, still had to take 12 units of education. Then we gave the AB. Then we were allowed to give the teacher's credential, not the MA. That's when most of my bachelor's thesis became MAs, is during that long period until we were made the university status in their state college system and given the grant to give the MA. We've been granted all kinds of MAs ever since. Oh yes, I've got lots of them in my office on my field and that, and several of them, as I told you, two or three of them that have been published.
Right.
Yeah, that was one of them. Another thing was that they developed some of the university attributes that we got. Among them was the State Employees Association finally was able to get the state to grant us certain privileges granted to the university, such as leaves of absence.
Oh.
Paid leaves of absence. Very strangely enough, I was on the committee to set up the rules, which we did. That was largely the work of Roy Cameron, who was very much interested in it. And in setting up the rules, we wanted to put in, I wanted to put in something about having an intellectual purpose, writing, or of that nature. But Cameron and most of the faculty said they did not want to have anything to do with publication of that, that this was a vacation for them, which was decidedly against my principles into it. And Roy Cameron himself got the first one, and his project was to go to New York to watch Wall Street operate. He'd been teaching economics and money and banking, which is ridiculous. But that's been the case. We had another one, also in the economics department, who was granted, not a leave of absence, a sabbatical. Mm-hmm. I'll talk about sabbatical here. Okay. Because he was able to get a ticket to go to Europe 1 year. Into it. And that, of course, hurt me. And there have been many others that have done the same thing, taken as vacation. But Roy Cameron himself says that that seventh year is a vacation for 6 years of teaching, to which I am opposed, and so did a good many others. And I'm very happy to see now that it's being more stringently put on a more university basis. But we didn't have it. The faculty still didn't have the scholars on it.
Yeah.
It got them later on under a more university status. That was also occurred during that time. Oh, there are many other things that occurred. Of course, we expanded on the campus. It was a very peculiar situation. When we came back to Europe, and when they moved the campus out here, we had a faculty parking shed in which 30, I believe, it might have been a few more or less, paid $30, I think it was, or $15 or $30 to have a parking space at the time. And I got one of those during the time, but when they expanded and needed the space, we were just kicked out, and that's all there was to it. But that's happened in many places on the campus with regard to the space that they needed to build and work on into here, which moved around. I became so more or less crowded and shelved up in my tower office that when they built the humanities building, the social science building, the SS building, into there, the history department moved. I was not moved because I had to mention, I said I wouldn't move until they would double shell all four sides of my, or I mean the walls of my newer office, which I was assigned one,
mm-hmm.
and was given, although it was the double office, I was given one alone. This they did, and I finally moved out of there.
What year was that?
I can't recall, to tell you the truth. I can't recall that now, but it was more than 1 year after the department had moved.
So you held out for your shelves.
I had, and they built my shelves. They won't do it anymore, as I understand it. And incidentally, too, when they moved into the humanities building, when the history department did, I was not moved, although that occurred later on, and I was left with my office on the third floor of the SS building. I still have it because there was too much to do it, and because the offices over there are much smaller. They're individual, but they couldn't take it, and they wouldn't wall it like I had into here. That was one of two privileges that I got on this campus. What else can I tell you about the Heppner years that occurred?
Now, in this time...
This is the 40s and 50s now.
They did grant the your department the MA degree at this time?
No, not yet. I don't think that was done until the early 60s.
Oh, really? It was that long?
Yes, maybe not. That, of course, you can find out right here. There's a list of the history theses right here. You can find out when the first ones was done. No, Leslie died, I think, in 58, and he was the one that gave the seminar the first 2 years. Oh, no, it's in the middle of 50s.
Because I thought I saw a master's thesis on Thomas Whaley, which...
Well, that's right.
And I think Thomas, his signature was Leslie's signature was on that MA.
On Whaley's?
I think
no,
so.
No, on Whaley's was John Adam and mine, and I'd forgotten who the second one was.
Oh, this was the...
Louis Leslie's has a few others, the one on the founder of San Diego, and
yeah,
a number of them.
Okay, I probably have them confused.
Not all did, but you can see them over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I can check
yeah,
the years.
Yeah, he got the first ones at the end of there. But
was
he
interested in doing local history?
Yeah, because there's nothing else that they could do. And he's got his friends, and some of the theses are good, and some of them are not. Yeah, into it. When he died in the middle of a semester, I had to take over the thesis. Leonard wanted me to take over the seminar when we first gave it.
Mm-hmm.
But Leslie was then with Heppner as the chairman. He was the chairman.
Mm-hmm.
And he just took it himself. And none of us yelled at him. I had to take it over in the middle of the semester. That's when Berge was writing. And so he finished up, I guess, under Ridge. That's when several of the others were writing, and at least I pulled them together to see that one or two theses was not mm-hmm. too good.
Now, it was by 1950 you took another trip to Europe,
oh,
right?
Yes. Oh, yes. I'll come to that in just a minute. After the war, that's a good thing. After the war, the Fulbright program was opened when the United States used a lot of the debt money to finance scholars going to Europe and teachers to go to Europe and to bring European scholars to America and so on. And very fortunately, during that time, I think I was on the first year, was appointed the first year, and got it because of a very fortunate situation. No, I was not the first year. I was the first year in the social science on there. But I got it because the Library of Congress knew that I was interested in the French archives, and Howard Rice, and who was the other man? He's taught English history for a long time there. He may still be alive. Found out about me and Monahan. So they said, you go and do it. So I got a Fulbright in 1950 and 51. Actually, I got it in 49. But my father died, and I wanted to wait a year until afterwards. And I had a hard time with our congressman at that time in postponing it.
Mm.
But Senator Sheridan Downey at the time got me and postponed it. And so I was put on in the 1950s, so I wasn't the first year. Actually, but they had to turn it because I didn't leave till after July, which is the fiscal year.
Oh, right.
So I think I was in the first or second year, but it was postponed into there. And I went there with a double purpose, as I gave to the Fulbright Commission. One was to get the early consular records of the French in the United States. And secondly, to work on, to get the French in California, a consular correspondence for the University of California. My problem, I still had my major problem of working in the Mississippi Valley, that I did undertook anyway. When we left 1950 and went to Paris, that was the hard time during the war. We had a hard time getting place, but we finally, Ms. Nasty and I finally wound up in an excellent location on Hotel Montana near the Louvre end there. And I used to go every morning to the Archive National, and then every afternoon to the archives of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Of course, I was well acquainted, and I knew what was going on.
Oh, what? When did you leave? In July?
We left in... must be August. August. Actually, I left... oh, no, it must have been in July. Because I left on July the 14th, I think, and I left France one day before the Bastille Day. It was just a year lacking one day or so from the Bastille Day, so it's in July. Oh, yes, it was in July that we left and went to Paris. And during that time, stayed in Paris.
Now, I suppose your access to getting these things.
Oh, no problem.
Everything was.
Oh, no, there's no problem. No problem. Yes, there were certain problems, as I was talking about, that arose into there. But so far as knowing where to go and what to do and so on, oh, that's no problem.
Right.
I had all permissions that were necessary so far as I knew in all the places. And had no trouble getting in. What the trouble was is something else, that the French archives, the Foreign Office, did not want anybody from the United States, as they said, microfilming in total, the whole series, large amounts. They never put specifically what it was, the whole series. I tried to tell them the folly that was in their policy, because they said that would stop Americans from coming over and so on down the line, that the French archives would then be found in the United States. I told them the folly of it, but didn't get to first place into there, and that caused a lot of trouble. A second problem was the problem that although all of the records relating to the foreign affairs, 1792 or 3, the middle of that year, were transferred to the Archive National, not in the Foreign Office one. But although they are in the Archive National, which is frankly fairly open in his policy in there, you cannot use them without having permission from the Foreign Office.
Mm.
And not only permission, but permission special for cotton. Okay. And that's where the problem came about. Two things occurred. All right, now let's go first to the first problem. The first problem I had was to get a hold of the consular correspondence, the early consular correspondence of the French consuls in the United States. This is what the Library of Congress wanted me to do. And I went in, and we thought we had the whole layway of bed of roses, because Howard Rice, my predecessor, is bilingual, was married to a French wife, had permissions of all of them, and he paved the way so that I didn't even have any trouble on top of it. But something happened. Something happened at the last moment when I asked for permissions to copy the early correspondence. The head of the Archive National said, "I have to get permission of the Foreign Office." And the Foreign Office said no. Therefore, I sat down and I began to calendar all the early correspondence. I made up my mind it would be to 1792. That would be sufficient onto that. The very latest ones are in, of course, in the Foreign Office, the later ones, but I'm talking about the earlier ones. But somehow or another, there had been Howard Rice's in-laws or somebody or cousin had been taken by surprise that I didn't get the permission. I knew nothing about it. But one day, I was called in and told to go order publishing men. And what had happened was that the top man, the head archivist at the Foreign Office, went on a weekend. The sub-archivist, whom I knew and had a lot of trouble with at the time, into there, was off on a vacation. And I left the third in charge on a Saturday. It was the librarian, I think. And it was then that his cousin from the archive called over and got permission from them. And they told me that, so that now that they had permission over in the archive, then I could get it. Mm-hmm. So I immediately went over and made the arrangements for it. Never said anything, just ordered everything copied and took the microfilms myself to the American Embassy and send them to the Library of Congress to be sure to get them, you know, itch. And they didn't find out about that till much later.
Oh, dear. Oh,
not till much later. Into the, and in the meantime, since I, by that time, I had had most of the calendar all done, I finished up the calendar as well as my own work. That was one of the things. But the other thing is about the California collar. One of the consulars of California. This is a little later. See, these are in the 40. These are all into there. Now, I had trouble about this, as I told you before, in 1930 and 31. But now when I came, they had a whole series open to the public, to 1870. A whole series. And I began to look at them. And then I found out why they were not allowed. I don't know whether I told it before or not, but let's repeat it. They were not bound until 33 and 34, when most of them, and I saw it in the inside of the six volumes on San Francisco that was interested in, and in the three volumes in Los Angeles and so on. And that's the ones I was really interested in for Berkeley at the time. Ah, but there's something more than that that happened into that. When I asked them, how about copying these for Berkeley? No.
No.
No call. I went to the head chief. No call. No call. So I began to sit down and calendar them into there. But once in a while they came in. I always had a lot of trouble with the sous chef, the second sub chef, who later became the old chef, now retired. The real head archivist knew English, could speak it as well. Well, maybe not quite as well as I did, but very, very well. And he knew that I was hard to talk French. And I'd seen him several times and had to talk French. He wouldn't meant anything in me. But one day I got a message from the sous chief that the big boys wants to see me. So I went in. He says, you can talk to English now. What he wanted, he was working on a problem of the Nootka Sound controversy, and he didn't know all of the English bibliography. And he knew I knew something about it. So I told him what I did, and went away. Then, Then I immediately wrote off to Hammond at the Bancroft Library, give me a bibliography of the Nootka Sound controversy. They shipped it right back to me, and I asked for special permission to go see the chief and gave it to him. From that time on, I got privileges.
Doors opened.
Oh, yes. And I got permission. I was a little bit afraid to take everything. But I pulled out my calendar. You see, because I had a lot of things. The whole box that I have, the materials that I had had before copied in there, that really was the contents of Volume 1 of San Francisco.
Mm.
And that's how I came to the conclusion that we couldn't see them because they weren't bound into there. And so what did I do? I ordered everything that I had before in the various volumes, ordered for microfilming to San Francisco, but the chief thing were the volumes of the consular correspondence of France in San Francisco and in Monterey, Los Angeles, down to 1870 when it was closed. That was all it was open at.
Mm-hmm.
But I was a little bit scared, so when I put in the list into there, I had to get some kind of a gimmick, and the gimmick I got, which I don't think they know to this very day, they may, is that I don't think I ever said I wanted this whole volume entire. What I did was to put pages one to so, folio one to so, and so to so. And there are sometimes our title pages and a blank page. Those are the ones I left out. In other times, when there was just a back notice, I copied the one letter in one page.
So it looked like gaps.
So it looked like a broken one, all of which I gave, of course, to the... I gave to the Bancroft Library. But then there's another problem about it, because there we get a bureaucracy against bureaucracy. They wanted to know for permission of whether we would do anything about it over there, because I wanted permission to publish them, too.
Oh.
And they wanted to know what we could do. So Hammond was always working with me at the time there. Send him a copy of the latest publication, show him that there's the University of California Press. And that's all they could say, onto there. So they drew up the list. Now, what happens is that the Foreign Office does not have the Bibliothèque Nationale does it for them. That's all right. They do a good job. But the point is that they have to pay the Foreign Office and so on, and they get it back from them. Now, the University of California cannot pay until they receive it. The French government got to have the money before the fiscal year is out.
Oh, dear.
And he was getting scared about there because it was taking them so long to get them in and to shove them, because they have to give them to the consul in San Francisco, who gives them to Berkeley, who then will pay for it right off the bat. They can rush that through. I got them. They got all that thing. And they got them there. Oh, they got everything there. And believe me, and not only that, by a pure accident, I visited somebody. I think I was in the Bibliothèque Nationale talking to one of the fellows when I went to there. One of the other big things that happened this time when I was in Europe was that they had the International Historical Society meeting in Paris. I got there just in time. Oh, yes.
That worked out real nice.
Oh, yes, that worked out. Oh, yes. Into there, where I got to see a couple of people, including the professor at the University of Aix, which is where we have a branch.
Mm.
With him. Oh, yes. And, of course, I knew Giraud, the professors at the Sorbonne and at the Collège de France. That's where I got to know them. And important one. One time I was talking to somebody, and I've even forgotten his name, in the Bibliothèque Nationale, and I ran across a book on the gold rush that I had never known. Popular thing, excellent. And I found out from him that there was the records in the police department of all places in the world, archives. So I finally found out where it was. It was in the police department, the security, on the hill. I went up there, sure enough, they're in the archives, they're big boxes. I asked, they have no facilities or anything, they're a small archive, you see. So I had to hire a photographer, and I brought over the most of the bankruptcies. The reason they have them there is because a lot of the companies sending immigrants to California